Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 123, recorded Saturday, August 13th, 2016. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this special delay edition of the Travel Commons Podcast. Can we avoid travel delays and coping with them when we can't? This episode is sponsored by HMS Host, operating the restaurants and bars in the 20 busiest airports in the U.S., thanking the IT staffs at Southwest and Delta for helping us hit our Q3 revenue numbers. Please use the promo code KICKOUTTHEPLUG on our website for a 20% thank you card, good at any airport. Coming to you from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, at the back end of what's been kind of a tough couple of weeks of travel, not only for me, but for many people in the U.S. You know, on the surface, it just, for me at least, it shouldn't have been that tough. I mean, it's not like I was going anywhere exotic, just still doing the back and forth to Charlottesville, Virginia, as well as a quick West Coast loop to Las Vegas and Irvine, California. Actually, things started going sideways on sort of that Vegas to Orange County flight. I mean, it should have been a quick hour hop, but then Southwest systems tipped over and, I don't know, things just kind of spiraled down from there. I mean, even in Vegas. I mean, after a while, I got tired of playing the slots. I mean, you know, the payout on those airport slot machines is lousy anyhow, and the beer selection is not the greatest. I kind of got jealous watching the Virgin America flights take off, but at least I wasn't one of the folks sitting on the tarmac in 110-degree weather waiting for gates to clear. I think my flight ended up taking, I don't know, something like about a four-hour delay. I was just glad my schedule, quite honestly, wasn't that tight at the back end in Orange County. I mean, I didn't have a critical meeting booked that afternoon. Now, the next day, Thursday, I was flying American back to O'Hare and started getting the delay notices. I popped open my flight tracking apps, FlightAware and FlightStats, and could see the problem. There was an ugly line of red on the weather map running right through Chicago. Now, being on the west side, you know, west of that, you know, the west side of the country meant that, you know, I mean, things weren't too bad for me. I mean, once that thunderstorm line cleared O'Hare, the first planes they launched out were heading west, away from the storm line. So I ended up only taking probably about an hour delay. Now, back in the office the next day on Friday, there were people trying to fly back from the East Coast who were getting in at, you know, 2, 3 in the morning, if they got out at all. I mean, I definitely dodged a bullet that day. However, that bullet found its target the next Thursday. I was back in Charlottesville, and the delay notices started at about 2 p.m. for my 6:30 flight. Not a good sign. So back to FlightAware and FlightStats. It was a replay of last Thursday, except this time I was right in the middle of it. Caught up in O'Hare ground stops. The equipment for my Charlottesville flight couldn't get out east and eventually just canceled. So I drove 2 hours up to D.C. to catch the last flight out of Dulles, which by that time was having its own ground stops. The Frontier flight that was supposed to leave at 9:30 finally pushed back from the gate at 1:10 a.m. I mean, it was my turn to stagger home at 2:30 in the morning. At first, I thought I wasn't going to fly at all this week, but then I got roped into a Thursday morning meeting in Atlanta. Not so bad, I thought. You know, fly down Monday night, fly back Tuesday afternoon. But then I woke up Monday morning to the news that Delta's systems had tipped over. However, it was another bullet dodged. I had booked on American going down and United coming back up, and both of those flights left on time and arrived early. Following up, my wish from the last episode of the podcast was not granted. My global entry renewal was conditionally approved, but I still have to go in for an interview. I mean, and they do look busy. I had to look out 3 months for the first availability in O'Hare. I got my notice in July, and my appointment for my interview is now mid-October. I just hope they don't listen to this podcast or follow me on Twitter. Now, I've been through Dulles twice since the last episode. I mentioned my second visit a couple of minutes ago, catching a Frontier flight out of the Z concourse gates. There you go, Z, like the end of the world. I had never seen any Z before in Dulles, and I guess it's kind of for good reason. They're about a half dozen gates stuffed in some dark hallway at the east end of the terminal. I mean, the typical slum concourse inhabited by budget carriers. Now, on the earlier visit, I was making a connection on United between the two midfield concourses, which involved a ride on the old mobile lounges. Now, if you know the history of Dulles Airport, you know that these mobile lounges were supposed to be the future of airport design, replacing the fixed gate and concourse structure with mobile gate lounges that would shuttle you out to your plane parked on the tarmac and then raise you up to the door. I mean, actually, not all that different from what happens in a lot of European airports, but without the hydraulic fun ride at the end. I tweeted a picture of the lounge, really more like a high-clearance bus, which elicited a response from Matt McCurdy with a link to a 1958 video entitled The Expanding Airport, A Study of Service and Convenience for Washington International. Note, it had not even been called Dulles yet. And that video is actually hosted on Vimeo. From the credits, it looked like it was created for the firm that designed Dulles. It's a 9.5-minute video and an absolute must-see. I mean, the disconnect between what people thought the future of travel would be and the reality almost 60 years later, that reality today, is just, it's insane. I mean, just the contrast between how the architects thought those mobile lounges would look, sort of couches with coffee tables and flower vases with cocktail service and everybody in suits and dresses, you know, versus what the reality is, my Twitter picture of people in shorts and T-shirts and backpacks crammed in, hanging onto poles and straps. I mean, that's just emblematic of just the whole disconnect. And check out the show notes for Matt's link to the video. I also retweeted it if you guys want to find it in my Twitter stream. The mobile lounges are slowly being replaced by the new underground light rail system between the main terminal and the midfield concourses. I don't know. Maybe as fewer people take them, they'll be able to replace the poles with some nice chintz couches. Last month, a PR agency for Marriott invited me to a launch that was being held at the Windy City Smokeout Barbecue event in Chicago. Now, never one to turn down free barbecue, especially on a Friday afternoon. I went. What they were doing was they were launching a new partnership between their Town Place Suites brand and Weber Grills, where they were putting Weber gas grills and tools out in the common areas for use by guests. I don't know, I think it kind of makes sense for an all-suite hotel. You know, families aren't looking to eat out every night, and, you know, you've got a place now to fire up some burgers on the grill. Especially when the Town Place folks explain that they're targeting kind of that mid-tier price range. It was, you know, sort of entertaining to see the young country Pop-Tarts try to grill pizzas. And by the way, I apply the Pop-Tart label to both the male and female teams. But I was more interested in understanding how Marriott was positioning their suite brands. How did Town Place, which quite honestly I had never heard of, relate to Residence Inn and Spring Hill Suites? The PR folks introduced me to a couple of brand guys who tried to lay it out to me. Town Place is lower priced, but a bit hipper than Residence Inn, but not quite as edgy as Moxie, which is their new brand targeted at millennials. And I don't know, Spring Hill never quite made it into the discussion. I don't know how well these micro targets work in the reality of, say, an Orlando or a Houston market. I mean, are they really able to hit those target audiences, or are they just kind of another brand that they sell to a new franchisee? So the guy, you know, down the street running the combo Courtyard Residence Inn property doesn't sue them. I, I don't know, but I still think it's a nice idea with the Weber. I wonder if the Town Place properties with these new Webers are going to provide shuttle service over to the nearest Whole Foods. A colleague of mine went to DEF CON in Las Vegas last week, the big black hat hacker conference. There's always interesting stuff coming out of there, always enough to nurture any seed of paranoia you may have lurking in your id. It also makes me a bit more sympathetic to the corporate IT security guys trying to keep up with this stuff. So, video jacking was the buzzed about thing this year to keep frequent travelers on the watch out. The attack uses your smartphone's ability to duplicate video out of the micro USB or Lightning port, and then project that video onto an HDMI TV. Now, this is really nice. I mean, it's a nice feature if you want to watch videos from your phone or tablet on, say, your larger, hotel TV. A lot of those places with flat screens. Little less nice if you plug your phone into what you think is a charging station, but using these HDMI mobile high definition link cables, which look very similar to straight power cables, your phone screen it can then be duplicated onto a TV screen, perhaps with a person or a video camera watching as you enter your PIN, work your banking apps, pull up that hidden text file with all your passwords written down. Krebs on Security, which is a blog that I follow, has a good write-up on it, complete with a quick demo video. I'll put links in the show notes if you're not feeling quite paranoid enough. We've talked before about how full planes and tight seats are breaking down some of the courtesies necessary to survive sitting shoulder to shoulder with complete strangers for, say a 2 to 4 to 8 to 12 hour flight. Usually it's not a problem. Everybody just, goes along to get along. And on one of my United flights last month, though, this broke down slightly. It started at boarding. I get to my row. There's already a guy in the middle seat. I tell him I'm in the window. He asks me my seat number. Okay, it's a little odd, a little edgy, but I tell him, confirming that yes, I can read my boarding pass and that he's going to have to move out to let me in. Well, I mean, he's 1K and he seems a bit pissed that he's in the center seat. I mean, perhaps he was hoping to slide over to the window, which is hence the quiz, but if that's the case, he missed the announcements at the gate asking for volunteers. I mean, this plane was packed. And then, after about 45 minutes into the flight, he looks over at me, just exasperated, and says, "Fine, if you want the armrest, just take it." And then, bitches about how miserable the middle seat is. I mean, this came out of kind of nowhere. I look back at him and I said, "Look, we can share the armrest." "There's no sharing," he shot back. I don't know," I said. "I can usually manage it when I'm in the middle." He then looked at me like he wanted to hit me, but then thought the better of it. The remaining sort of 2.5 hours were less than comfortable as we sat within inches of one another. Now, I don't know, you may disagree, but I'm not in with this whole "the middle seat is so miserable that you're entitled to everything else in the row" idea. Now, I've sat in the middle seat a lot. And I don't think it's that bad if you're in the exit row, or as in this case, United's Economy Plus, where you've got extra legroom. Indeed, I'll pick those middle seats over window seats in the back of the plane almost every time. And when I do, I don't expect sort of any special treatment from my roommates. I manage to arrange my elbows so we can all use the armrest. One of us takes sort of the front half of the armrest, the other guy takes the back half. But never do I blame my roommates for my seat choice. I don't know. I'd appreciate your guys' thoughts on it. And actually, any thoughts, questions, a story, comment, travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along. The email address, it hasn't changed in God knows how many years. Comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send an audio comment. Twitter, I'm at MPeacock. You can always hit me there. Post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or you can always go old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is, can we avoid travel delays? So Peter Rukavina, a longtime Travel Commons listener, sent me an interesting email at the front part of this week. Peter said, the tweet stream of travel despair is a frequent enough occurrence as to almost be its own medium now. As an example, Air Canada announces a 9-hour delay. Help me. I'm an occasional practitioner myself, Peter says. My question, to what extent can delays, cancellation, luggage loss, bumping, etc. be mitigated by being travel savvy? In other words, by traveling smart, how much more control over wrenches thrown into the plans do you have? Well, Peter, that's a pretty damn good question, especially given the tales of woe over the past month that I just went through. During which, I'll admit, we're accompanied by a couple of streams of bitch tweets. You know, we're never going to completely avoid travel despair. I mean, complete system failures ought to be black swan events, although having 3 full outages, United, Southwest, and Delta, in 13 months suggests maybe they're not. And flying into smaller places like Charlottesville, Virginia, leave you exposed with few options. But I do think there are some things we can do, the consultant in me wants to call them strategies, that I think can reduce the probability of a bad time and hopefully reduce the impact when those bad times do happen. And I've talked about some of these strategies in earlier podcasts. You know, focus your trips to earn airline and hotel status, don't check luggage, fly direct, and if you've got to connect, never book a connection less than 90 minutes. And, you know, you'll find most of these things in the sort of travel listicles that pop up around the holidays. Now, knowing that Peter, as a longtime listener, has heard all of these before, I tried to think of some next-level strategies. Keep using that word. Here are some that came to mind. It's not an exhaustive list, and I'd appreciate it if you guys have some ideas to send them on in, but I don't know. Here's at least a start for us. First, avoid flying in the evenings. Now, I break this rule all the time, but hey, think about it. Delays build during the day, from weather, congestion, mechanicals, psychotic passengers, because the airlines don't build their schedules with enough slack to allow recovery. So by sort of 4 or 5 p.m., the sum of these delays, then combined with the packed evening rush hour schedule, it just drives a high probability of delays. American and United's LaGuardia to O'Hare evening schedules are just the perfect illustration of this. Throw in, say, a summer thunderstorm in O'Hare or Dallas or Atlanta, and the flight ops centers just start canceling flights, just start dropping them to try and catch up. If you're on the last flight out, you can be looking at a night on that comfy-looking airport couch. And even without cancellations, delays lead to tight connections, which can lead to missed luggage. The second thought on this is use flight tracking smartphone apps. Now, you know, I've mentioned FlightAware and FlightStats, and I use these apps to access more data than the typical gate agent can. So, you know, on that Thursday that I ended up, you know, having to drive up to D.C., what happened was as the delay notices started coming in from American on my Charlottesville flight, you know, FlightAware showed me that the plane was still on the ground in Wichita, Kansas, probably waiting out an O'Hare ground stop for thunderstorms. Well, it still had to get to Chicago and then out to Charlottesville. And seeing the parallel lines of red on the radar view, I had a pretty good sense that this was not going to happen. And then when I decided to head up to Dulles for that Frontier flight, I could see the flight history on FlightAware. It had been delayed more often than not, but rarely canceled. And that night, which I talked about earlier, as O'Hare and Dulles ground stops kept pushing that departure time, I wasn't too worried that it would cancel because I had seen the flight history. Another strategy, spread clothes across checked and unchecked luggage. Now, if you've checked luggage, I assume it's for a good reason. You know, I don't know, you're carrying bottles of wine home from a Napa trip, you got to pack formal wear for a wedding, and I also assume that you got a carry-on. So put 2 changes of clothes and kind of the bare set of toiletries, you know, like a toothbrush, in your carry-on. I mean, most lost luggage will catch up to you within 24 to 36 hours. And if you're traveling with a family, spread everyone's clothes out across all the bags rather than having each person have their own bag. I mean, it would be rare for the airlines to lose all the bags of an entire party. I mean, with things spread out across the bags, everyone is good for, you know, a couple of days, even if a bag is lost. I'm always amazed that more families don't do this. The third thing, know your geography. What are your alternative airports and how far of a drive are they? I mean, this has become even more important over the past few years as the big carriers have reduced flight frequency in order to fill up their planes. I once had a project in the middle of Connecticut that was about equidistant from White Plains Airport and Hartford Airport. So the choice that we made was to fly in and out of White Plains, even though it was a smaller airport, because when flights got delayed or canceled, we could just keep driving down the hutch to LaGuardia. When we flew out of Hartford, it was a much longer haul to the nearest airport. And finally, and this one might be a bit obscure, but it's been useful to me. If your corporate car rental agency is Hertz, always book an intermediate car so you can use Gold Choice to quickly swap cars if Hertz assigns you a real beater. Now, you can always go back to the counter, stand in line, demand a better, cleaner, less decrepit car, but you're trying to avoid delays here. Now, most corporate rates that I've used have had, I don't know, maybe a dollar, $2 difference between the compact and intermediate rate. It ends up being cheap insurance. I mean, I've only ended up using the Gold Choice, I don't know, maybe 10, 20% of the time, which is way too much. But I'm always glad to have that option. So there you go, 5 ways that I can think about to travel smarter. If you've got a suggestion, please send it in. Comment, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. Post them on the website at Travel Commons. Twitter might be, I don't know, if you can get it within 140 characters, great. Or put it on the Facebook page. But look forward to hearing some of your guys' thoughts. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is coping with travel delays. Now, during my last CIO gig, I was traveling as much, if not more, than any of my consulting gigs. I kept my Chicago residence and rotated weekly across offices in Scottsdale, Dallas, Naples, Florida, and Croydon, south of London. The head of my project management team, at some point, he started doing a bit of travel to support some of the system migrations we were doing. And after a couple of months of the usual flight delays and other travel snafus, he asked me, "How do you deal with this all the time?" I looked at him and I said, "I depend on the 3 major food groups for travelers, alcohol, salt, and fat." I remembered this when I was killing time in Dulles with a dinner of fish and chips and a local beer, Hop Lips IPA from Dover, Delaware. I rang the bell on all 3. Now, doing that too much, though, is how you end up quietly asking for belt extenders on planes, so you got to find other ways of coping. Now, one bad habit that I have, and I mentioned it before, is bitch tweeting. I mean, and I've confessed to it in many prior episodes, and as much as I try to stop, I find it releases frustration. Kind of like shouting into a bag or something, and it keeps me from popping a cork at innocent gate agents. I mean, I apologize to all Twitter followers who have had to endure that. I tell you, I've downloaded a meditation app for my iPhone, but it just has not seemed to help. Now, a more constructive thing is that I try not to show up to the airport until I have to. So if I get early notices of a delay, I push back my cab to the airport. Part of the frustration is that delays consume time. I can be more productive in my office than trying to find a place to work at a crowded gate or a crowded airport club. When I was traveling regularly to New Orleans a few years back, I mean, it seemed that half the flights back to Chicago in the summer were delayed by afternoon thunderstorms. I mean, it just turned out, and again, this is where I would use things like FlightAware, I just wouldn't leave for the airport until I saw the inbound equipment was in the air. I got a lot more work done, and on extended delays, I ate a lot better food. Well, you know, and I tell you, the trend for airports upgrading their amenities helps a lot. I've never done the neck massage thing that seems to be cropping up at a lot of places. But, you know, back to that alcohol food group, I've done a few wine flights at Vinovolo wine bars, the ones that are sort of popping up in more U.S. airports, and have done, you know, some nice beer tasting at microbrewery bars like Great Lakes Brewery in Cleveland. Cisco Brewers have a place in Boston Logan, as does Carl Strauss. San Diego Brewery has got a bar in LAX. I don't know, it's something local that keeps you occupied for a bit, and searching them out, because they're inevitably in a different concourse than you, also kills time. In the end, though, you know, it is what it is. If the delay isn't causing you to miss something important, it's easy to kick back and read the paper. But if you're missing your kid's parent-teacher conference, there's not much that's going to help your frustration. I don't know, except maybe for bitch tweeting. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 123. I hope you all enjoyed the show and hope you decide to stay subscribed. As always, check out the show notes for music links. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, I don't know, maybe some other places. They always, you know, more of these places just keep turning up, and Travel Commons seems to be on them, so I love it. If you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter, hit Travel Commons on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. As always, it helps add content and helps me crank out the next episode. So until we talk again, travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.